All right, let's take our Bibles and turn to the book of Hosea. Right after Daniel. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea. The first in our Bible of the minor prophets. If you look at the chart on the back of the handout, I've kind of put them a little bit later. That's why we've done a few before him. But if we look at the very first verse of the book, we see that he had a long ministry. He was during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, who were kings of Judah, so four different kings there, and then also in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, which is the same Jeroboam that Amos prophesied during, king of Israel. Hosea is 14 chapters. We're not going to be able to go through all 14 chapters this morning. We are taking this summer a quick survey of the minor prophets, and I'm similar to as we did through Job last summer. So I'm trying to just kind of give you an overview, the big picture of the book, try to just point out a few things as we go through that might help you understand it as you read through it. And so Hosea is, there's a lot of people that have preached a lot of messages from the book of Hosea. There's certain phrases and ideas throughout that are tremendous. There's no way we could spend a long time. Sam's not here to tease this morning, but maybe not as long as in the book of Luke, but we could spend a long time in the book of Hosea, and we're just going to do it in 2 weeks. But the book is divided generally in along these lines. The first three chapters kind of gives this personal narrative of Hosea's life. And God chose to make Hosea's life a picture of his own relationship with the people of Israel. We see that as we go through Hosea's life and marriage and children and all that. God chose to use them as a picture of his relationship to the people of Israel. It's pretty obvious. In fact, he even says it in the scriptures. But first three chapters then are kind of this personal narrative and a symbolic picture of Israel and God. Then chapters 4 through 14, all the rest are not symbolic. They are they're preaching, they're sermons, and of different for different times, relating to different kings and eras in Israel's history. And so I'm going to try to get through chapter 8 this morning. Chapters 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, and generally, there's a slight differences, but generally each of those chapters are a different sermon to the people of Israel, and an overruling theme for those is that God is holy. We'll see other things about God as we go through there, but an overruling theme for those is that God is holy. And as we see God's holiness, in stark contrast to that, we see Israel's sin. A holy God magnifies or shows clearly the sin of his people. So God is holy, and Israel, their leaders, their people, and even Judah are sinners. Then chapters 9 and 10, which we won't do this week, but I'm just going to give you the big picture, kind of has the theme that God is just. Okay, and along with his justice comes punishment. So we see that in chapters 9 and 10. And then to kind of cap it off, and this theme runs really from beginning to end, chapters 11 through 14, is that God is love. And God is love. The story of Hosea is baffling to some, okay? But it shows the love of God. We see parallels in the prodigal son and the father in that story. Hosea shows us that God is love, and in that sense, Israel has hope. So I'm going to be reading through Hosea, and pausing here and there just to kind of point out different things along the way. And As I mentioned last week, I'm just going to mention this every week because we have new people or visitors each week. When you read Scripture, there's a visible difference between capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, and capital L-O-R-D. And the reason there's a visible difference is because the words that God gave us are different behind those words. So if you're reading it, looking at it, you can see that difference. I know you're reading along with, but since I'm speaking it and you can't hear the difference, whenever the word capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D is there, I'm going to supply the word behind it, which is Jehovah. I will say there's some argument about whether it should be Jehovah or Yahweh, and I've talked to Dr. Strauss. He's a Hebrew scholar, and he said, well, the Yahweh thing is more of a new evangelical thing. They made up these theories about all this, and really the word behind it is Jehovah, and if you want to hear the word that is translated behind that, you should use the word Jehovah. So that's the one I use rather than Yahweh. And so as you're reading along, I just explain that so that it's not a confusion to you as we go along. So here we go into Hosea, and I don't know if we'll make it as far as I want to go, but the chapters are of varying lengths, and we might be able to. First three chapters are this personal narrative and a symbolic picture. The word of Jehovah that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. The beginning of the word of Jehovah by Hosea. And Jehovah said to Hosea, go, take unto thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms, for the land has committed great whoredom, departing from Jehovah. Now, let me just pause right there. There's different ideas behind what is meant even right here. My belief is that Hosea wrote this section after all of this had taken place. Some believe that God told him before he was ever married to go find a whore and marry her. It seems to me that that is not the case because we have wife and children all mentioned in this one sentence. Seems to me God knew what was going to take place. He told Hosea to go marry Gomer and the daughter of Diblaim, and it turned out that she was that way. It is a picture of Israel. Israel was not perfect, but so there's some, the pictures, it's hard to tell even from what is, there's arguments for both interpretations or understandings. You think that when God took Israel, chose them, Abraham's father had idols and stuff and all that. But it seems that Abraham came from the godly family line. So anyway, maybe I shouldn't even mention that, but this is the way I think of it, that this section, Hosea is kind of sitting back in his older age and writing this first section and saying, this is how it turned out, okay? And I take that for a few reasons, but one is that the wife and children are all mentioned in the same sentence, and that has to be kind of a summary-type sentence. Anyway, this is where we get right into it. Hosea's life is a picture of God's dealings with Israel. He says, do this because the land, the people of Israel, has committed great whoredom. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. And Jehovah said unto him, call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. And it shall come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. Now Jezreel is Jezreel is prominent in the Old Testament. The Valley of Jezreel is also now called the Valley of Esdraelon. Part of it is the Valley of Armageddon is all through there. It's about 10 miles wide, and it runs from the Jordan River basically all the way out to the Mediterranean Sea near Mount Carmel. It's very fruitful. It's the breadbasket of the country and all of that. And so that's the area, the Valley of Jezreel. One very prominent story with Jezreel that fits exactly with this is Naboth's vineyard, was hard against the wall of the city of Jezreel. So, and we know about Naboth and Ahab. Okay, the blood of Naboth was shed there in Jezreel because Ahab and Jezebel and all of that thing. Well, God avenged, if we want to say it, God avenged Naboth's blood on the family of Ahab through Jehu. Okay, Jehu destroyed the family of Ahab, but he did it, he was a little more zealous about it than God intended. He shed blood and all that. And his family, even though he was anointed to do that, he didn't turn to God himself. He turned from some of the more wicked idolatry of Ahab and Jezebel, but he kept the calf worship that Jeroboam before them had set up. And now Jeroboam, who Hosea is prophesying during and in his kingdom, is one of the descendants of Jehu. Okay, so God is saying that your family, I'm going to avenge that blood that was shed to establish your family as king of Israel, because you haven't followed what I said. You've kept this idolatry of the calf worship. There's a lot of other things that could go into that. Jezreel and the family of Jehu and Ahab and all that, there's a tremendous amount there, but that should kind of give you some idea of what is meant by that. So then, continuing, and she conceived again and bare a daughter, and God said unto him, call her name Lo-Ruhamah. Now the prefix Lo means no or not, okay? And that's important because later we're going to see just Ruhamah and Ami instead of Lo-Ami. But Lo-Ruhamah, for I will no more have mercy. So the idea is no mercy. Lo-Ruhamah basically means no mercy. And God says here, I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. But I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by Jehovah their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by horsemen. Now, if you remember, Sennacherib came up against Judah, and he was defeated, not by sword, not by bow, not by horsemen. God delivered them, sent a rumor there, and or the angel of the Lord, or all of it. And so God saved Judah, and not by those things. But he says he would not have mercy on Israel, because they had gone too far or too long, not returned to him. Now, when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. Then said God, call his name Lo-Ami. I think that's how you say it, Lo-Ami, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. So Lo-Ami is not my people. Yet, and this is kind of a theme throughout Hosea, throughout the Bible. Hosea illustrates and preaches to us the love of God, God's love for backsliders. And let me just throw out a thought. We can hardly comprehend the love of God as it is. But we would not have any idea of the love of God if his love had never been spurned, if his love had never been rejected, if his laws had never been broken, if his justice had never been challenged. We wouldn't have any idea of God's love. And so God allows these things to take place so that he can greater demonstrate his great love for his people. And so we see here, after all this, he says, I'm going to avenge the blood of Jezreel. No more mercy. You're not my people. I will not be your God. Yet, the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there it shall be said unto them, ye are the sons of the living God. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together, and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel." So this is a prophecy future, saying, even though these things are true, I still have a covenant with the people of Israel. They are still my people, and they will flourish again someday. Then we continue. "Say ye unto your brethren, Ami." Okay, that's different from Lo Ami. "And to your sisters, Ruhama." Okay, so that's opposite, basically. Lo Ami, not my people. Lo Ruhama, no mercy. "Saying to your brethren, ye are people. To your brothers or sisters, there is mercy. Plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife. Neither am I her husband." Now, this is not saying that she never was my wife. She's saying that she has left. She's gone. We see that. "Let her, therefore, put away her whoredoms out of her sight and her adulteries from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and set her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness, and set her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst. And I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be the children of whoredoms. For their mother has played the harlot. She that conceived them has done shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers that give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, mine oil and my drink." I want to point out that the idea there is, I'll go after my lovers. That would be the idols, the false gods. And Israel decided that the false gods were the ones that were giving them their bread, their water, all the prosperity that they had, they ascribed to false gods. Okay, so that's what that is saying. You can see the parallel from the verse to the people of Israel. I hope you can see the application to ourselves. So many times, whether it's a country or as an individual, we look at the things that we have gotten or that we have, and we ascribe having them to the wrong reason. We ascribe that we have them because of ourselves or because of other things, and not because of God who actually gives them to us. "Therefore," God says, "behold, I will hedge up thy way with thorns." So what happens when we do that? What happened to them? The way was hedged with thorns. You try to go the way you want to, and there you're going into a thorn bush, since God is trying to push them in a different direction. "And make a wall, that she shall not find her paths, and she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them, and she shall seek them, but shall not find them." So she, Israel, is determined to go after false gods, and God is making it hard for them to do that. But she's continues and determines, and shall not find them. "Then shall she say, I will go and return to my first husband. For then was it better with me than now." That's the purpose of God sending these things to them, to bring her back to him. "For," God is saying, "for she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal." He gave them that stuff, and they used it to give to Baal or Baal. There are many different Baals, but we'll get to that a little bit. "Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, and all her solemn feasts, and I will destroy her vines and her fig trees, whereof she has said, these are my rewards that my lovers have given me." Okay, the things that he had given her, he's going to take away because she said, these are the rewards that my idols, this idol worship has given me, my lovers have given me. "And I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field shall eat them, and I will visit upon her the days of Balaam." Balaam is plural, many gods. "Wherein she burned incense to them, and she decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers, and forgot me, saith Jehovah. Therefore, behold, I will allure her, and bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. All these things are happening, and what does God say? Well, because of all that, I'm gonna keep trying to get her. It reminds me of, there might be two different interpretations of that. The Lord says all these things, and yet his hand is stretched out still. He still wants them to come to him. I bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her, and I will give her her vineyards from thence and the valley of Achor for a door of hope. And she shall sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be at that day, saith Jehovah, that thou shalt call me Ishi. Ishi means husband. And shalt call me no more Baali, which means Lord. So God would be Israel's husband, not their Lord. Not necessarily that he is not their Lord, but the relationship would be husband, not Lord and servant. Along with that is because, or for, I will take away the names of Baalim, or Balaam, out of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name. And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, and with the fowls of heaven, and with the creeping things of the ground. And I will break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth, and will make them to lie down safely. And I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness and in judgment and in loving kindness and in mercies. I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, and thou shalt know Jehovah. And it shall come to pass in that day, I will hear, saith Jehovah, I will hear the heavens, and they shall hear the earth, and the earth shall hear the corn and the wine and the oil, and they shall hear Jezreel. It's kind of a picture there of how he would use the heaven and the earth and all of this to respond to one another and give them fruitfulness again. And I will sow her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that hath not obtained mercy, and will say unto them which are not my people, Thou art my people. And they shall say, Thou art my God. Then said Jehovah unto me, Go yet, or go again. Love a woman beloved of her friend, and he is her friend, yet an adulteress according to the love of Jehovah toward the children of Israel. God still loves Israel even though they look to other gods and love flagons of wine. Flagons of wine is cakes of grapes, and these were things that were used in idol worship. So I bought her to me for 15 pieces of silver, and for a homer of barley, and a half homer of barley. And I said unto her, Thou shalt abide for me many days. Thou shalt not play the harlot, and thou shalt not be for another man. So will I also be for thee. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king. The children of Israel are still under this dispensation that's mentioned here, if we call it this, many days without a king. They have no king, without a prince. They have no sacrifice. There's no temple worship. And also, without an image. Okay, so they're not idolaters anymore. Without an ephod, without a teraphim. So all of that is taking place right now as far as children of Israel are. And afterward shall the children of Israel return and seek Jehovah their God and David their king. Who would that be? Son of David. And shall fear Jehovah and his goodness in the latter days. All right, so this is the end of the picture of Hosea's life, and we get into these sermons. I'm not going to make it, but here we go. Sermon number one, and these sermons have the overruling or overguiding theme of God's holiness. Hear the word of Jehovah, ye children of Israel, for Jehovah has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land because there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land by swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery. Almost all those are all what we see in the second half of the Ten Commandments. They break out and blood touches blood. Therefore shall the land mourn, and everyone that dwells therein shall languish with the beasts of the field and with the fowls of heaven. Yea, the fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. Yet let no man strive nor reprove another, for thy people are as they that strive with the priest. Therefore shalt thou fall in the day, and the prophet also shall fall with thee in the night, and I will destroy thy mother. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I also will reject thee. that thou shalt be no priest to me. Seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children. As they were increased, the more there were, the more sins. So they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. They eat up the sin of my people. And this would be the sin offerings. Like they offered sin offerings, well, then they would eat that sacrifice. And so they multiplied sin offerings, not because of their sins, but just so that they could eat food. And they set their heart on iniquity. And there shall be like people, like priests, and I will punish them for their ways and reward them their doings. For they shall eat and not have enough. They shall commit whoredom and shall not increase, because they have left off to take heed to Jehovah. Whoredom and wine and new wine take away the heart. My people ask counsel at their stocks. These are idols. And their staff declares unto them. The staff, that's divination. They would, you know, have these long staves, and it would say yes or no on it. And they'd ask a question, and then they just, which one comes out? And that's, for the spirit of whoredoms has caused them to err, and they have gone a-whoring from under their God. They sacrifice upon the tops of mountains and burn incense upon the hills, under oaks and poplars and elms, because the shadow thereof is good. Therefore your daughters shall commit whoredom, and your spouses shall commit adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they commit whoredom, nor your spouses when they commit adultery. Why? For themselves, now the sense changes, but for themselves are separated with whores, and they sacrifice with harlots. What he's saying is the men are much worse than the ladies. Okay, that's what that is saying there. It's not necessarily, I will not punish them, but in comparison, they're not going to get the punishment because themselves are separated with whores and sacrifice with harlots. Therefore, the people that does not understand shall fall. Though thou, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend. Come not ye unto Gilgal, neither go ye up to Beth Aven. Beth Aven is a satire. Bethel is the house of God, and that's where they should have worshipped. And it was that's not Jerusalem where they should worship, but Bethel was the house of God. Jeroboam had set up calf worship in Bethel. And so this is a substitute term for the same place. It's not a mocking, but it's trying to make a point, because Aven means vanity or emptiness. So the house of emptiness. It's not the house of God. It's the house of emptiness, house of vanity. So don't go up to Beth Aven, nor swear or say, Jehovah lives. For Israel slides back as a backsliding heifer. Now Jehovah will feed them as a lamb in a large place. Ephraim is joined unto idols, let him alone. Their drink is sour, they have committed whoredom continually. Her rulers with shame do love, give ye. The wind has bound her up in her wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. So now we get to the second sermon. Hear ye this, O priests, and hearken, ye house of Israel. Give ye ear, O house of the king, for judgment is toward you, because ye have been a snare on Mizpah and a net spread upon Tabor, and the revolters are profound to make slaughter. Slaughter is a word used instead of sacrifice. So because the worship and the sacrifices were not sacrifices, it was just slaughter. It was just butcher so they could eat and indulge their flesh. Though I have been a rebuker of them all, I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hid from me. For now, O Ephraim, thou committest whoredom, and Israel is defiled. They will not frame their doings to turn unto their God. For the spirit of whoredoms is in the midst of them, and they have not known Jehovah. And the pride of Israel doth testify to his face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. And now it's different, this chapter. Judah also shall fall with them. They shall go with their flocks and with their herds to seek Jehovah, but they shall not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them. They have dealt treacherously against Jehovah, for they have begotten strange children. Now shall a month devour them with their portions. The month is in a short amount of time, he's saying, this is going to happen. Blow ye the cornet in Gibeah and the trumpet in Ramah. Cry aloud at Beth Aven. After thee, O Benjamin, Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel have I made known that which shall surely be. The princes of Judah were like them that remove the bound. Therefore, I will pour out my wrath upon them like water. Ephraim is oppressed, and unto Ephraim, and broken in judgment, because he willingly walked after the commandment. Therefore will I be unto Ephraim as a moth, and to the house of Judah as rottenness. When Ephraim saw his sickness, and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian, and sent to King Jareb. Yet could he not heal you, nor cure you of your wound. For I will be unto Ephraim as a lion, and as a young lion to the house of Judah. I, even I, will tear and go away. I will take away, and none shall rescue him. I will go and return to my place till they acknowledge their offense and seek my face. In their affliction, they will seek me early. Let's stop there. We'll pick it up next week and see how we do. All right, let's pray.